One of the challenges that believers face today is maintaining a sense of connection to the scriptures that we study, that we profess to follow and to obey. There's just a tendency sometimes among folks to feel that because of the separation of time, that in some ways there's just a lack of relevancy of what we read in the scriptures, and our modern day sophisticated lives, as we tend to think a lot of times that we're so much different from people of the first century, and the things that we encounter are so much different than what they encountered in their challenges to their faith. And the truth of the matter is that there's probably very little difference between the kinds of things that we face and the kinds of things that they face. 1 John is a letter, actually all three of the epistles of John are letters that seem to me to be particularly relevant in light of those things, those challenges. And in that John probably wrote these letters 50 years or so after the time of the establishing of the church, so the church has been in existence for some half century. It's not an insignificant amount of time, and the people, many of whom make up the Lord's people at this time, are likely second, maybe even third generation Christians, as we might describe them. They're the children and the grandchildren of people who had become Christians back 50 years or more ago. So there's that second and third generation aspect among those that John was writing to that is very often present among groups of God's people today. And no doubt among this group, there would be people here who are either the children of parents who became Christians, or maybe you're the grandchild of someone who became a Christian in your family in previous times. And with that, there does come a challenge to keeping things relevant and making sure that what I'm doing and what I'm believing, what I'm practicing, is something more than just this generational religion that got handed down to me, but that it is what is in fact a genuine faith. Someone said a number of years ago, God has no grandchildren, and that's exactly right. He only has children, and the fact that my parents were Christians was certainly a blessing. But I ought not to think that I got into the family religion, and I'm just that's just going to carry me on. God has no grandchildren. He only has children, and he tells us how to be his children throughout the scriptures. I want to focus our attention of our study for just a few moments this evening on the second chapter of 1 John. Perhaps we could describe it in this way, maybe the splendor of the first converts has worn off. There's a great temptation that these Christians to whom John writes, there's a great temptation among them to be like the world. And in fact, he warns them against loving the world and having that devotion, misplaced devotion. So John writes about things that I think probably would help us a lot, because there are, I believe, some of these similarities. The first thing that he writes about in this chapter that I think would be great of great help to us is he describes God's evaluation of obedience. What does God think about obedience? And if you look in verse 4 of 1 John chapter 2, it says, the one who says, I have come to know him, that is, to know God, and does not keep his commandments, he is a liar and the truth is not in him. Now, one of the similarities between John's time and our time is the way that that people went about claiming relationship, a relationship to God. He says that the claim could be made in verse 4 to have come to know God. And there were certainly among the Greeks and the Greek philosophical schools of thought, and it affected early Christians as well. There came to be this notion of having a special knowledge, a secret kind of knowledge, and that just not everybody has. Not a lot unlike the concepts that people have today about truth and about what's right and what they're going to believe and what they're going to practice. The fact is that probably in most instances people's beliefs and religious practices are based mostly on their feelings, just kind of what I've come to feel is right. I do pretty much what I've come to conclude is a good thing to do. It's a very, very subjective kind of approach to what one is going to believe. And the people in John's day just were not a lot unlike that. And so claims could be made that I know him. You know, there's just a lot of folks that would make the same claim today. I know God. I have a relationship with him. But listen to what God says as he expresses this evaluation of obedience when it comes to having a relationship with him. The one who says, I have come to know him and does not keep his commandments is a liar and the truth is not in him. Now that's just one thing that happens throughout this letter that John writes. He does not pull punches, and he repeatedly makes this accusation, makes this charge about people and some of the religious claims that people were making, that they're lying. What they're saying to you is a lie. It's not true. And you need to know that, is what he is trying to convince his brethren of. But the basis upon which he speaks here about this coming to know God and having this relationship with God is a person's willingness to keep God's commandments. The absence of obedience makes a person untruthful. Their claims untruthful. Now, please understand me. That doesn't mean that what a person claims about their knowing God, and that doesn't mean that that they are deliberately deceiving. It doesn't mean that we have to question their sincerity in what they're saying about how the characterization of their relationship with God. But what John does tell us here is that we do need to acknowledge the fact that if a person's not willing to obey God, then claims that they may make to know Him are just untruthful. They're inaccurate. They're wrong. And these could be, and very likely are today, as they were in John's day, these could be very religious people. But yet, the absence of obedience makes a person untruthful in their claims to know God and to be related to Him. But not only do we get God's evaluation of obedience here, we also see in this chapter that the way of obedience, according to God, is the pathway to knowledge. Turn, if you would, in our text to verses 3 and 4. 1 John chapter 2, verses 3 and 4. By this we know that we have come to know Him if we keep His commandments. The one who says, I have come to know Him, and does not keep His commandments, is a liar, and the truth is not in him. But whoever keeps His word, in him the love of God has truly been perfected. By this we know that we are in Him. Obedience brings an individual into a place where God can make known to them His truth. You know, neglect of any kind of law will bring about an indifference to the basic truths that those laws are built upon. Obedience to the laws of nature will enable a person to gain a greater scientific knowledge of the laws of nature, and will enable that person to increase that knowledge. You know, you can deny, if you want to, you can deny the law of gravity, and then you're going to probably have a pretty hard time in coming to an increased knowledge about the laws of nature, as long as you're unwilling to recognize that law of nature. But when you're willing to recognize that law, then you can, as though you were using building blocks, then you can begin to build a greater level of understanding scientifically. Well, the same is true of spiritual laws. But if a person is in denial of what God has revealed as being spiritual truth, if a person is in denial of that truth, it's going to be impossible for them to come to appreciate and to know that truth and to increase their knowledge and to grow and to mature. That's why he says, you go back to verse 3 again, that by this we know that we have come to know Him if we keep His commandments. You drop down to verse 5. He says, whoever keeps His word. All in the world that is obedience to the laws that God has revealed. Whoever keeps His word, in Him the love of God has truly been perfected. And by this we know that we are in Him. Obedience simply aligns the Christian with the divine plan. Enables us to do a better job of aligning our lives with the divine plan. When we learn but don't do. We're trying to please God, kind of like Saul did. You remember the story about Saul in the Old Testament and the command to go out and to destroy the Amalekites, and he only killed part of them, and he kept the king as a prisoner, and he kept the best possessions of the people, and the prophet Samuel comes to him, and he rebukes him. And in fact, eventually, you know, God says to him, basically, you're a rebel. And I'm going to take the kingdom away from you because of your rebellion. And his rebellion was that when he had learned what God wanted, he didn't do it. And as a result, had aligned himself against God. And it just wasn't possible. Under those circumstances, it wasn't possible for Saul to keep himself in the pathway that God approved. It wasn't possible for him to develop the knowledge of God's will and the ability to relate to God's will as he should have. But now there's a third thing that obedience will do for us that John identifies in these verses, as we've already read in verse 5. Obedience will bring us to maturity as well. He talks about us, he says that whoever keeps his word in him, the love of God, that is, the love for God, genuine love for God, has truly been perfected. You want to know how to show whether or not you love God? Well, what John is telling us here is it's just this simple. It's do what you come to understand God expects of you, what God has commanded, what God wants. It's just that simple. Do what God has said, and in that you'll be demonstrating your love of God. And the fact that it has been perfected, or that it has been matured within you. By this, we know that we are in Him. You want to know how to know if you know Him? You know, just a lot of folks. Well, a lot of folks make the claim. We started out by acknowledging that a lot of people claim to know Him. But if you want to know how to know, if you know Him, John gives it to us right here. We can know that we know Him if we're the kind of people who, as we learn what God wants, we align ourselves with whatever it is. We align ourselves, we align our lives with Him and with His will. And by doing that, then, we can know that we know Him. And as a result, John goes on in the following verses to talk about the fact that this mature obedience that we demonstrate to the Lord enables us then to be in the light in our lives, to live in the light of God. Verse 8 and following, he says, on the other hand, I'm writing a new commandment to you, which is true in Him and in you, because the darkness is passing away and the true light is already shining. The one who says he is in the light and yet hates his brother is in the darkness until now. The one who loves his brother abides in the light, and there is no cause for stumbling in him. But the one who hates his brother is in the darkness and walks in the darkness, and does not know where he is going because the darkness has blinded his eyes. He gives the depiction here of someone who is unwilling to align their life and their practices with what they have learned to be God's will. What is God's will? Well, he's using an example here. It is that we love our brethren. But if you're unwilling to love your brethren, what that means is it's it's more than well, what that means is you've made some kind of evaluation of your brother, and for whatever reasons you think they're not worthy. No, that's not all it means. It also means that what you've done is you've made an evaluation of what God has said He expects of you, and you're unwilling to do it. It's the problem of disobedience. And because you're unwilling to do it, he says of these that you stumble, that such ones stumble around in darkness. They don't know where they're going. Why is that? Is it because they're dumb? No. It's because they're in the dark. And why are they in the dark? It's because they're unwilling to do what God has said He wants them to do. In regard to their relationship to their brethren, they're unwilling to demonstrate this love towards their brethren. Instead, they're hateful towards their brethren. Because of that, they're in the dark. However, for people who are willing to be obedient to the Lord, to comply with Him, to align their life with His will, these are people that don't stumble around in the dark, but rather they walk in the light, He says. And they can see where they're going. And they can live life in a far more successful way because of their willingness to obey. I will admit to you that obedience is, a lot of times, not the most appealing subject. You know, you put up on a sign outside the building that the sermon topic for this morning is going to be obedience. You're not going to have people just banging the doors down, you know, to get in. And it's, but it is tough to find a subject more at the root of what it takes to be a child of God than this subject of obedience. Do you want to know if you know that you know Him? Evaluate your life and see how quickly and how completely you're willing to conform to what His will is. And that will go a long way towards answering the question of whether or not you really know Him. If you're not a child of God tonight, you need to become one. And the only way to do that is by aligning your life with His will. He told men and women through His Son Jesus Christ that they must believe that He is the Son of God. If they would believe that, turn from their sins, confess their faith in Him, and be baptized, washing their sins away, they'd be forgiven of all their past wrongs, made right with God. They would truly have come to know Him and set out on that pathway in which they would continue, should continue, by virtue of their willingness to conform and to obey to the Lord's will, they would continue to develop a life that was truly pleasing to Him. If you're subject to His invitation to come to that kind of a life, then we stand ready to assist you to give that obedience to Him. Encourage you to do that while we stand and sing.